So here's the million-dollar question. How are men like us who work hard, have good motives, and a God-given purpose supposed to fulfill the calling on our lives and the dreams in our hearts, all while establishing sexual integrity, thriving relationships, and a meaningful connection with God? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Sathya Sam. Welcome to Unleash the Man Within. All right, what's up, everybody? It's Sathya Sam here. Welcome to Unleash the Man Within. Thank you guys so much for listening. And here we are, our fourth round of Sean Bonito and I hashing out some recovery stuff, doing some Q&A. Sean, it's been fun, man. I'm enjoying this so far.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's been some great questions. Keeps us on our toes, man. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I know. I actually love it. I'm really, really enjoying this. All right, I'm going to kick this off with a bit of a punchy statement. I think porn viewership numbers would plummet if the local church did a better job talking about the subject. What do you think?
Yeah. I talk about often, just in regards to the nervous system conversation. You and I had that, I think, in the first episode we did together. It's like if pastors could just slip in a small understanding of the nervous system before they tell people to read their Bible and pray more, people would have incredible results with addiction. They would feel closer to Jesus. And I think they'd have better families, better marriages. So I completely agree. And it's supposed to be a hospital. So the fact that we're not experiencing the support that we are to get in the hospital and we have to go find it elsewhere, that's exhausting enough. So I think guys are experiencing the friction of finding it on their own. There's embarrassment because it hasn't been a hospital over a lot of years. It's been a lot of shame and more of a museum. And there's so much opportunities. It's easy to say, oh, the church, all these bad things, but there's so many good things happening. But I think that's a powerful statement that I would totally agree with.
Yeah. What's the stat? Like 93% of local churches don't have a program or a curriculum for people struggling with porn.
Yeah. I think that was from the Barna Group. I think it's quite a few years back, but
yeah, that was North 2016 survey.
Yeah, that was North American, but still, like, that's staggering. Even if it's a bit better today, it's not going to be that tremendous.
Yeah, no, and to be honest, it's possible it's even gone in the wrong direction. So,
yeah.
I'm really passionate about this. I get asked this question a lot on podcasts when I interview, because especially obviously Christian podcasts, because I think people, they like having you and I on their podcast because they can't find people to talk about this stuff because, right? Not even pastors are talking about it. And so people always ask, like, what does the church need to do?
Yeah.
What? I mean, and this is where, like, I feel like I have at least maybe a leg to stand on, having been in pastoral ministry for 10 years before doing this full time and being a pastor's kid and a grandpastor's kid. And, you know, my great grandpa was a pastor as well. It's all rich in the family. I think pastors are actually a huge part of this, you know, because pastors typically don't want to bring someone in and talk about pornography because, number one, it's going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. It's not going to be the, you know, super awe-inspiring, feel good Joel Osteen kind of message on a Sunday. Or number two, the pastor himself is struggling. So he doesn't want to feel like a hypocrite, you know, to talk about pornography when he himself is struggling. And I think that component I really empathize with, because I was struggling with pornography when I was a pastor and didn't ever really figure out how to navigate it as a pastor. Like, I guess I did to an extent. And I was very fortunate. My last job full time as a pastor, I was under leadership that was really understanding. So I could talk to them about it. But some people can't, right? Some people, if they tell their leadership, it's over. You know, they lose their job.
Yeah.
So I feel it for pastors. So, like, on one hand, I'm like, man, I want to see pastors do better in this area. And on the other hand, I get it. What do you say when someone on a podcast is like, hey, what should the church be doing?
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think there's a challenge with pastors being put on a pedestal, which is very unfair. I think that's really, really hard. They then become a idol to the church in many ways. And, you know, if they have a wrong, then it's almost like, you know, the church is God. I think that's a huge problem in North America, especially today. Like, the church has become God, which is just really, really dangerous. But the thing that I often talk about, Sathya, is that a pastor's job is to shepherd the flock. And a lot of times a pastor becomes a counselor, a therapist, a relationship coach. And it's like, yeah, like there's elements to them in shepherding. But I think ultimately a shepherd is that person who can sit with you in pain, can be with you in pain. They might not have to be an expert in anything. I think that is where the church has often kind of found parachurch ministries, which,
yeah,
you know, on the surface looks fine and dandy, a partnership of collaborative church organizations, but, you know, it's supposed to be the church. And often we just don't see things happening in the church, which is where we then see those people have to go outside the church to find these organizations. So I think we've just burdened our pastors as well. They're exhausted, they're tired, hence why porn usage is so high. I think if we actually allowed pastors to do what they are called to do, which is to teach and shepherd, and we had people come alongside them in the church to do these sorts of things so that the church can be a hospital, I think the church would be better off.
I agree. And it goes without saying, the viewership stats among Christians are not really that different than any other demographic. And there's 2 billion of us in this world. So the numbers would actually improve significantly if Christians were getting resourced the right way. I really do believe that, as outlandish as it may sound.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I can't remember. Helena was telling me about this, but Michael Knowles from Daily Wire was on the Whatever podcast recently for the second time. And one of the OnlyFans models basically said, like, you know, you're saying that faith is the antidote to healing things like addiction and all the things that we do, but why is it your church that's some of the most addicted to pornography? And Helena said his answer just was not good, which is just really sad. We also have a lot of leaders in parachurch organizations that just don't know anything about this topic. And it's really hurting the church a lot. Bad advice, unwarranted advice. It's just causing more harm than good.
Yeah. I really give my pastor credit, because he's really close with my family, but not really me, because I lived in a different city for a long time. But he followed me on Instagram. I didn't even know this. And so he came up to me. We had met like years ago, and he came up to me. This is like probably about a year and a bit ago. He was like, "Hey man, I've been seeing your stuff on Instagram. It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. We need to get you in here." And my wife and I had been attending the church for like 6 or 7 months at that point, and he didn't even know. The church is about 1,200 people.
Yeah.
So he was just seeing us every once in a while and just thought we were visiting, because that's what we used to do. But he said, and the church had recently let go of one of their prominent pastors because of a moral failure that they didn't disclose details about, but it was safe to say it involved something of a sexual nature. And he basically was like, "Hey, we really need your message. Like, can you come in and talk?" And I've really appreciated that. I would say there's churches that are doing a really good job. You know, they have the pure desire groups, and the pastor's transparent from the pulpit. Totally. I think you have a lot of churches that do nothing other than to, you know, they'll lay down the law. They'll tell you what the standard is, but there's no real support there. And I think there is an emerging contingent of churches that are just looking for the right person that they could maybe trust to carry that message. And I was fortunate to be that guy in our local church. And I think that's cool. And I would love to see more of even just that. That would be such a good start because people are begging for it, man.
Yeah. Praise God, man. I love that. I had a client, might have been yesterday, he was saying that he goes to a like pretty small church, like 200 or 300 people, relatively smaller church, and they brought Jay Stringer in to share for a weekend, and they make every staff member and elder go through his video course.
Whoa.
Like, that's amazing. It's like things you hear from like churches of 3,000 people that have the money for that stuff. Like, how committed are you to sexual integrity to do that with a small church? So I just think, like, what a great example that's an option. And you know, I don't know how much Jay Stringer is charging, but, you know, for a small church to be able to afford that, it must be reasonable enough to say, this is a big deal that we need to talk about. The other thing that's just been on my heart a lot since, you know, we lived in Halifax, very spiritually dark area, lots of witchcraft, lots of different denominational tension, even black and white tensions, fascinating place to be. You just really realize if you go to a church for enough weeks in a row, there's a lot of churches that just don't share the gospel every week. Like they'll preach about marriage, and it's a motivational talk. And if you're in that church as a single person or a divorced person, there's no value at all. And the only value of church is the gospel. So I think that's actually the heart of the problem if I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a really good point. Man, that's a big conversation about church and what church has become these days. Because I think, like my wife and I were really involved at a very charismatic church in Toronto for, you know, a decade plus, 20 years plus between the two of us. And we loved it to bits and pieces. But ultimately, you know, we reached a point where we just felt like we weren't getting fed. You know, we weren't getting fed spiritually there because the word had become really weak, very topical. But to their credit, they did an altar call every week, and the church we're at now does an altar call every week, and they don't just dance around it or do it lightly as protocol. Like they really preach a good, like the gospel gets presented every single week, and people give their lives to Jesus every week. It's
so good.
It's amazing. And it's I used to always question it a little bit because for example, like a Reinhard Bonnke, I love Reinhard Bonnke, really respect him, you know, a world renowned evangelist who brought literally tens of millions of people into the kingdom. But then I always questioned, like, you know, there was like 3 million saved in Lagos and 7 million saved in Uganda. And you're kind of like, what is happening to these people after they make that decision? His organization actually got really good about plugging in local churches and equipping them and saying, hey, you know, after we run this crusade with literally millions of people, your churches might get flooded, and here's how you disciple them. And I thought that was cool. And maybe it's not the best system in the world, but they put their effort forth. And that's the one thing. This is why I got on this, because I feel like quitting pornography and walking in holiness and righteousness and all that stuff is actually, you know, it's discipleship. Like at its core,
that's a great point.
It's just us becoming more Christ-like, you know? And maybe that's part of it, you know, is that we've kind of isolated the subject matter, and it's had its own curriculum and stuff. And maybe it just needs to be more integrated into the day-to-day discipleship process that happens at the local church. But those two things both are not separate and apart.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. I posted in the community, I think a couple of weeks ago, I think it's Titus 1 or 2, Paul's basically saying, it's like, I proclaim the faith and I teach the truth. And I think we have a lot of people that have understood the proclamation of faith, but to like have somebody come alongside you and teach you the truth and how to live it, it's just not happening. It's just not happening. Yeah. You see, that's what Paul dedicated his whole life to after being saved, you know, with Timothy and Titus and the churches. It's like, like we have a great template. We have a great blueprint on how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I sat on the leadership meetings of this one very large church and was like, you know, it would be great to see some more substance in the messages and, you know, like kind of what you're talking about. And it was like, oh, well, you know, we're trying to do something different here on Sundays, but if you want more message, like if you want more depth, like there's always podcasts and, you know, da, 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 da. And it was like, man, what? You know, that's just crazy. That's crazy that like our main presentation to the general public, or not the general public, but, you know, people that are coming to get spiritually fed is, so watered down and so diluted. So, anyway, Sean, I wanted to ask you what it's been like. You are living with family in the Czech Republic, and I've been living with family for the last 10 weeks here in Jamaica. And, dude, it's got some interesting dynamics. And I wanted to ask you what it's been like, because I could tell you some stories on our end, man. It's been it's actually been really good. Like, and like, I'm not going to bash my family, obviously, even if there was stuff to bash them about, and there isn't. But I feel like it's really stretched me. Like, I've really grown a lot. What's it been like for you guys?
Yeah. So for us, it's a bit kind of twofold. So the first one is that we do have separation. So we're living upstairs. There's a staircase and a door that's blocking where Helena's mom and dad live. So that obviously gives us some freedom there. The challenge is we have a toddler who hears babička or djeda, grandpa and grandma in Czech, and she wants to go see them, and the door is slidable. Right. So it's not hard for her to go and do that. So some of the main challenges that we've had is not at all really with Helena's mom and dad. The only thing is Helena's dad's fairly pessimistic. So I don't hear him talking because I don't speak Czech, but Helena hears it all. And that's been pretty hard for her. I could imagine if I could hear him, it would be fairly hard as well. But the main challenge has been the out of controlness of other family members visiting whenever they want, and us having to basically kind of be involved in the family dynamics, or it's like we're ignoring family, or again, Violet hears everybody downstairs and she wants to go see everybody. So there's certainly times where, you know, one of Helena's sisters is very toxic. She's just become a very large challenge for us working through that since we moved here, really. So, you know, she visits often and it's kind of like, oh, like, it just reminds me of the unsafety I felt with my mom growing up. So that's been really hard. So yeah, that's been the main challenge of just like, man, we don't like, we live here, but we don't like have autonomy. So that's hard. Yeah. But the blessings have been like, Violet is around family all the time. Been able to share the gospel with Helena's sister and brother-in-law who speak English, and had a like crazy long conversation with them actually just the last weekend. So there's been just some cool opportunities that would be a little bit more challenging if we didn't live in that house. So really big blessings. And Helena's dad is just an absolute gem when it comes to like handiwork. So he's our go-to guy for when we have challenges around the house. And then Helena's mom is like such a phenomenal grandma with helping us out with just caring for her with Lydia now. So it's it's been a stretch for me. Like you're saying, the stretching is like for me and my family dynamic, safety with my mom was always just obsolete. So I've been stretching myself to grow in feeling safe around Helena's mom. And she's always proven herself safe, and she is a very safe person. But because of my inner child, my upbringing, my inclination is that it's just not worth going into depth with her, because with my mom, it's never been worth it. So I'm trying to break that. We got in some depth over the last weekend, which was actually really challenging depth. We had a bit of a theological argument, which was actually really good for me. She's Catholic from Europe, so some interesting things there, but it was so good for me to go through that. And I really appreciated and respected her for that, that we could have that conversation without it leading to her shutting down or us, you know, butting heads or something. So that's actually been really therapeutic for me.
It's interesting how kids really shape that. Cause I remember you telling me, I remember the first time you went to the Czech, or maybe it wasn't the first time, but I just remember the specific trip you went and you came back and you were like, man, I just saw the way Violet was. And, you know, like there's something there, and look what that's led to now. You guys live there. I don't feel quite the same thing that I think you felt with Czech with Jamaica, but I will say my mother-in-law is just unbelievable with Judah.
Yep.
And like, we always joke, like Judah's three favorite people are mommy, daddy, and Nani, you know, his grandma.
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean, for starters, like she was there when he was born. So she was with us for the first 6 weeks or so. And now we spent another 10 weeks under her roof. And for me, that's always like the trade-off is it's like, sometimes it's hard, you know, sometimes my mother-in-law wants me to go down the hill and get onions for her for like the seventh time in this week, you know, but then Judah just adores her, you know, and gets this great nurturing kind of environment where he's loved and he's celebrated, and you know, mommy and daddy don't have all the pressure to be the sole caregiver. So
Yeah.
Just an interesting trade-off with family, man.
Trade-off's a great word. And sometimes it's like, man, this doesn't get any better. And sometimes it's like, what am I doing here? It's very interesting. But I obviously won't share any details, but God's been stirring in our heart for what might be some of the next things we do in this next season. And we've been praying pretty diligently for him to reveal some wisdom, some answers. And we were thinking that there's something in with the area we live in for a potential building project. And we thought it was going to be like 6 months from now, we might hear from them if it's a yes or a no. And we got news that it's like next week we're going to find out. So it's just been really cool how God's been maneuvering that. And Helena's family is really big. Like her parents are really big on like generational blessing with like passing houses down or land. So there's that thing that I would never, like my family has no investments, nothing like that. So just even being a part of a family that cares about blessing the next generation, like I really feel like I want to honor them. That's an absolute gift.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. Cause I would say my, you know, it was just understood that my parents probably wouldn't have a lot to pass on. And I'm not even the slight bit bothered by that. But my wife and I have been talking, you know, the company's growing and we have handled our finances very differently than either of our parents, you know? Yeah. So like we've been, even when we were dirt poor, we were putting money away for the future as best as we could. And now I don't think the interview's out. We recorded the interview, but I don't think it's been released at the time that we're recording this. It probably will be though by the time this comes out, but we interviewed a guy named Scott Donnell and he is all about financial literacy, but especially financial literacy kind of in the home. Like he really believes it should all be happening in the home. So he's equipping parents to, you know, do this better with their kids and vice versa. And it's really, really good stuff. And all of his concepts came out of studying some of the world's wealthiest families that have been wealthy for multiple generations. That was like the stipulation. It's not just like that they've been wealthy for one generation, but how are they staying wealthy throughout centuries? Because I think it's 90% of wealth is lost by the second generation, something like that.
Yeah.
And he basically said like, it's more about leaving a heritage than it is about leaving a specific inheritance, which I thought was really cool. Like it's not about the assets. But at the same time, the one thing he did say is he's like, but they all still left something for their kids. Right. And there's something really powerful about that. You know, even the Bible says like a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. And I think that's cool. You have that, man. It's cool that that experience has been so positive for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I must say, man, it's a testimony to a lot of the healing that I've gone through in the last 6 years. This would be a disaster if I was, not a emotionally fit, gospel-centered Christ follower. It would be an absolute disaster. So I'm so grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. That's really cool. Are you cooking? I know you're driving on the Czech roads. Are you cooking any Czech food yet?
Oh man.
Or just eating it.
Yeah. Just eating it, man.
Okay. All right.
The cooking side for me is so poor. So,
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. All right. I do enjoy cooking, but, Helena's so good at it. Helena's mom and dad make us food enough times where we're well taken care of. So
dude, you're blessed, man.
Yeah. The thing I really enjoy here is just exploring some of the different beers. Actually, it's such a beer country. It's it's actually really nice to be a part of that and not get sucked into it, but to enjoy it. But you know, like a bottle of beer here is $1 Canadian and it's like high quality, good stuff. So it's just nice to be able to enjoy it without breaking the bank.
God bless Europe, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember we were in the UK and we were looking for a bottle of wine. And it's like, man, a bottle of wine's like $3 here. Yeah, it's like good wine, like good European wine.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. Switzerland would be the only exception. You pay markup on everything in Switzerland, but.
Totally, man. Those Swiss francs are high.
Yeah.
That's a high currency.
We were showing some friends our video. This is like the video we show everybody about our Europe trip, which is me paragliding the Alps. And it's super fun because like the instructor who's actually like steering it, she's got like, you know, the handles, but then she actually had one hand that was holding a selfie stick. Yeah. So she's like taking the selfie and she's showing all around. It's this sick video. And I paid like $40 for it. It was the best $40 I ever spent.
Yeah. So epic, man.
It was really cool. But then anytime we tell people about Switzerland, we always have to warn them, like, it's actually number one, it's super expensive. But then they also just charge you for everything.
Yeah.
So like after that paragliding ride, I remember we were so parched because, you know, you've been up in the air for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
And then so we just went and they're like, you know, we ordered some water and we got a little bit of food. And they're like, oh, do you want, you know, sparkling water or still water or whatever? And we were like, oh, just from the tap is fine. You know, and it's Switzerland. I can literally see the river flowing down from the mountain that they're, you know, getting the spring water from.
Yep.
And they charged me like 3 Swiss francs for that glass of water, for the glass, crazy, you know, man. Not even a bottle.
Yeah.
So we just warned people. We're like, it's expensive and you're going to pay for stuff that you didn't even budget for. So just be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Checks like that too, man. It's very hard to get free water. Really? And you have to pay to pee and you got to pay to drink water, which to a Canadian is insane.
You pay to use the public bathrooms? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like in Prague, you're probably looking at like a $1.50 to go pee.
And you got to pay more if you're doing a number two, or
yeah, you sometimes.
Oh my word!
Yeah, and you can imagine a tourist like you're drinking and eating all day, right? It's not very fair.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
You got me. Wow. $20 on the toilet today.
Seriously, so there's like a strategy. Like you really do have to use the bathroom before you go out because you're actually saving money.
Yeah, yeah. If you're at a location and you buy a beer, you can go pee for free. It ends up being a free beer.
Oh, I see. There you go. There you go.
That's the Prague trick right there.
That's hilarious, man. Wow. Too funny. Okay, well, let's jump into some questions here.
First question is from Eric and Boys USA. And my wife and I had a small discussion about holding high standards and expectations for ourselves versus letting go and not trying to do more than we're able. Having high expectations for myself often adds to my stress, which has negative effects at work and at home. How do you manage striving for excellence with the stress and anxiety about not being where you want to be or who you could be?
Yeah. Man, I could have written this question myself. This is like classic Cynthia syndrome right here. So Eric, I feel you, man. I think usually people that are in this situation asking this question, so you're putting a lot of pressure, a lot of stress on yourself. You can feel the stress, but you don't want to sacrifice the standards and, you know, like let yourself go and all that kind of stuff. The thing that I've had to learn, and this is true in recovery. When I think about my physical health, this is definitely true just about every facet of life, which is that everything when it's healthy has a rhythm to it. And the rhythm will always be a conglomerate of both go and slow. And so, you know, even working out, like I used to do a lot of HIIT workouts, so I have weights in my hands, but then, you know, I'm it's kind of like circuit training. You're going from one thing to the next. And because there was no rest in between, my body doesn't get a chance to recover. And so I was getting into better shape, like cardiovascular wise, but I wasn't actually really putting on muscle or getting stronger. To actually, you know, strength train effectively, you lift the weight, but then there has to be a rest so that your body actually learns to adapt and it can send a signal. I remember I used to be a songwriter, and I went through this season. And I wrote this little lyric, like, God, you work the most when I rest. And that was something I had discovered, was just sometimes in my striving for excellence and upholding standards, especially, you know, if you're trying to quit pornography and you have a goal, like I want to quit porn by the end of the year, and you end up putting a lot of pressure on yourself to try to hit these targets. Sometimes what happens when you don't give yourself permission to rest or a little extra compassion when you're having a difficult day, is you end up deviating further and further away from that standard, and the actual efforts that you put in are less effective because of it. So the person who asked this question needs to hear more than anything else, you gotta rest. Mm-hmm. You have to give yourself permission to let go. You've made letting go this bad thing that is deviating from the standards, when in reality, it's the very thing that you need to hit them. So that would be my big recommendation, is I would let go. I'd take the pressure off altogether. And the other thing that I would say is, sometimes if we get too caught up in upholding a standard, we end up losing sight of the things that really matter to us. So for example, like a physical goal, like I have a goal, my big crazy goal is that one day I want to weigh 200 pounds and be 12% body fat. So that means I have to put on like a ton of muscle. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. And I'm kind of going in with that set of expectations. However, I'm going to do everything I can, and I have something I'm kind of steering the pushing the needle towards. But what's the actual reason I want to do that? I just want to be a healthy guy. And there's a lot of research showing that muscle mass can actually contribute to longevity, because it's actually muscle deterioration that can cause the onset of other diseases and the body shutting down. So this is actually much more about long-term health. So if I stress myself out trying to hit my fitness goals, I'm now being counterproductive. Because even though I'm upholding the standard and trying to achieve the goal, I'm shooting myself in the foot, because the added stress is negatively contributing to my goal, which is to be healthy long-term and to live a long, successful, you know, stable life. So I think it sounds like you just need some permission, man. You got to let that thing go. that'll be good for you. And in the process, you'll actually find more strength, more clarity, and everything else that you need to have a successful recovery or whatever the goal might be that you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric, great question. I think piggybacking off of what Sathya is saying there with his goal to be 200 pounds, 12% body fat, it's like he has a vision and a why behind what he's doing. So usually when people set standards or expectations on themselves, it's really just kind of because they want to be better. Like, we can all do more. We can all do harder things. We can all grow our capacity. But why? Like, that's really important. If you don't know why, then it's just going to be too hard. Like you're saying, not trying to do more than we're able to. Usually what we're able to do from a psychological standpoint in our mindset is we're actually able to do more. And when we have a white hot why or a purpose behind it, we're able to stretch ourselves. So I've talked about this in the past as having a compassion and dignity combination. So we want to have a sense of dignity where we do show up, we do hard things, we do try our best. But then we also want to have compassion to say, man, my baby was up all night last night and I did not sleep. Today is just not going to be the same as yesterday. We want to be able to have compassion for ourselves. So it is on those days where we're in more traffic than normal and we miss our 1 hour window of working out, like whatever it is, like we need to grow in the ability to have compassion for ourselves, but still say that there's still a standard when I miss something, but today doesn't have to be the definition of my value, my worth. So there's a lot of ties here that go into value and worth, but I guess my bigger overarching question, which you can't answer because this was sent in, but it's like, you know, when you say you had a small discussion about holding high standards and expectations, I would encourage you and challenge you guys to have a big discussion, a ongoing discussion. Most people have a small discussion on a Sunday night and then they try something for the rest of the week without talking about it. So I really encourage you guys to have like a good chunk of time to figure this out. Give yourself a 3-month window, figure it out. It's like, today just felt terrible. I feel a lot of pressure. If you're feeling pressure, probably because you guys didn't really talk about the deeper realities of the problems behind why you're not doing X, Y, or Z. So people often aren't disciplined because of fear, trauma, fill in the blank. So if we just try and change our behaviors, we'll never actually make any progress. So I'd really encourage you. Obviously, I don't know the context of where you are with maybe pornography or whatever else it might be, but it sounds like there's some deeper roots here that need to be healed, as there is for everybody when we're trying to grow our capacity in an area. So that would be the thing that I would focus on is like, why do you want to be excellent in an area? And is that area even motivating to you? Or is it just kind of keeping up with the Joneses? Because we all fall into that trap and keeping up with the Joneses just sucks. It just sucks. So, you know, I got a 3-year-old daughter and a newborn, and I've had to say no to more things because of that. But I've been able to hone in on the things that really matter. And I feel a lot of dignity, but also feel a lot of compassion. And I feel okay with that.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned the keeping up with the Joneses thing, because I did observe that in, again, we don't have you in front of us, Eric, but I did observe just the language, like how do you deal with the stress and anxiety about not being where you want to be or who you know you could be? And I read a book called The Gap and the Gain by Dan Sullivan and Benjamin Hardy. And the whole premise of that book, I'll give you the Coles notes and then I highly recommend you go read it, is basically we tend to compare ourselves to our future self, who we want to be, who we know we could be. But it always, you're always going to come up short. You will never find joy comparing yourself to who you could be. And what's much healthier, and this is out of working with thousands of entrepreneurs who are very high achieving and successful, who seemingly, you know, hit all their goals and had everything they wanted. They were all miserable because they were looking ahead and comparing themselves to, oh, but I could be this, or I should be doing that, or I should be at this level. And so what he had to teach his business owners, his clients to do, is to actually compare themselves to who they were before. And that wound up being a much more joyful process.
Wow.
And they, when they looked back and they said, man, you know, 6 months ago, here's where I was. Look at where I am now. Not only were they more content with themselves, but actually it gave them more hope and more optimism for like, well, in another 6 months, where could I be? And that's something I would encourage you to do as well is, it sounds like you're probably just a little bit too conscious of, you know, how well I could be doing something, where I could be in life. You probably need to look back a little bit. And I would encourage you to do that intentionally. You know, map out, like, what were some highlights in the last year of your life? What are areas that you've grown in? This is something you could ask the Holy Spirit to do. You could use our journaling methodology if you want to do that. We talk about that on the podcast. But there's a lot of ways that you can actually reframe this, experience a lot of joy, and it still positively contributes to you achieving more goals and upholding that excellent standard.
Yeah, I love that. That's really good. Yeah, there's one other book that I really love by a guy named John Acuff called Finish. He was basically like surveying all the books in the self-help category. And there was no books written on the topic of finishing projects. They're all on starting projects. And he just basically, you know, a lot of the book is laughing at like the go-to like motivational gurus that tell you to like big goals and big dreams. He's like, I'm telling people to cut their goals in half and extend it by a month. And they're just winning. They're experiencing wins and they feel good about it. And they go and do more. So similar to what you're saying, I love, and John Acuff's really funny too. So a couple of book recommendations there. Like a lot of guys I know will recommend Atomic Habits as a great book. And it is a great book, but I don't see a lot of people applying it fruitfully. So I actually think books like Finish or what you're talking about, Sophia, has much more helpful merit than a lot of these cool books like Atomic Habits.
That's good.
Second question is from Steve in North Carolina. I've struggled with porn since I was 12, and I'm a very young 58-year-old now. I've done various programs over the years, such as Setting Captives Free, Conqueror Series, etc. I've really got serious about wanting freedom in March 2020 and received counseling and read your book, as well as others like Changes That Heal from Dr. Henry Cloud. I've been mostly sober since March 2020, but still have a few relapses every year. Months go by between relapses. Sathya has mentioned before that this stage is the hardest part of recovery, where one is almost, but not quite, completely free. How do you move from this stage to complete freedom?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I love this question. Young, 58, really, really good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you put in your work here, Steve. So this is really cool. I think it would be interesting to see where you were versus where you are now, because you said you're not really struggling a lot anymore since March 2020. So I'm going to guess it was probably quite a bit more before that. So for starters, congratulations on your progress. Very cool and honored that our book and some of those things could be a part of your success. So the reason that this stage is so difficult, where you're just slipping every couple months or infrequently, is that you don't get a lot of data. Like whatever the issues are, they're not presenting themselves very frequently. And so it requires a lot more vigilance. And I was thinking of one client. We had one client who was just stuck at the 4-month cycle. So he basically went from daily to weekly to monthly to every 4 months, and he couldn't get past that barrier. And the one thing we observed with him is that he's actually, like, our three pillars that we recommend the recovery journey to follow is building self-awareness, healing of the heart, and identity. And what we actually observed is his self-awareness was still pretty low. So when we would ask him, like, well, okay, when you slip every 4 months, like, what's happening in month 3? And he's like, oh, I don't know. You know, I'm not really paying attention then. It's like, okay, well, you need to, because there's probably some clues there that you're missing. And it's not going to be obvious. It's going to be very subtle things. But what happens is it ends up being like a very slow burn that leads to these, you know, more infrequent relapses. The other challenge that can come up here, and I know that Sean will definitely include this in whatever wisdom he's got to offer here, but the relapses, the slips are always an indicator that something within is not yet integrated, it's not yet healed. And I think sometimes people reach this stage where they're like, man, I'm 95% of the way there. I don't think I really need to go back and do all that work. I should be past that. And sometimes you think you're 95%, but you're actually only 50% of the way there. Not because you still have years of work to go by, not by any stretch of the imagination, but simply because the one or two things that you are missing are actually so significant. And it's not always just a little thing that pushes the needle forward. Sometimes it's actually a very big thing. It's you know, a piece of a trauma or a piece of your story that you haven't addressed yet. You know, sometimes it's maybe an accessory habit that's actually fueling some of the dopamine cycles and the addictive behavior patterns. So that would be my two big encouragements. Number one is, hey, you've done really well. Clearly you're making some really good progress here. And you need to start looking at the months leading up to these relapses to get some better clues. And so we recommend that guys are tracking their internal triggers, tracking their external triggers. That's something you should still probably be doing every day, because those are going to give you a lot of clues, even if it's, you know, 2 or 3 months leading up to where you do have a more tempting season. So that would be the first thing. And the second thing I would say is don't ride the coattails of your success so far and assume it's a small thing. There could actually still be a major thing that pushes this thing way over the edge, and you don't want to miss it in the name of pride. And I'm already there. I shouldn't have to go do something at this point. You might still have to, and that should be totally fine if on the other side of freedom is, you know, better relationship, stepping more into your calling and your potential, confidence, all the stuff that you're after in this journey. So those would be my two big things.
Yeah. Yeah. Great to hear about the sobriety, really exciting, you know, struggling since you're 12, getting serious in 2020, and then also having sobriety in 2020. There's something special about that. It's not that common. That's a long time of addiction and a very short time that you were actually in some recovery to get those sorts of results. So of course there's more. And I love what Sathya is saying, like, don't think that it's been a long time. Like, you were addicted for, I don't know how many years, but let's just say 40. Give yourself even 4 to 5 years to be healed. It's really cool to think that God can do a work like that. So a few things that come to my mind. I don't know the counseling that you went through. It's awesome that you did that. I don't know anything about it, but, you know, Conquer series, usually programs like that, a lot of information. There is good application, but usually they're facilitated groups. They're not going to be from an expert. So you're going to lack the depth to get into trauma and roots and all of that. So that's something to keep in mind. They also do have a purity focus rather than a deep, their holistic healing focus. I'm not going to speak for every program by any means, but I was co-leading Pure Desire for a season. So it's good to be around that and learn. You know, Dr. Henry Cloud, great stuff when it comes to boundaries. You know, the book is called Changes That Heal. Probably going to be more focused on changes, like behavioral changes, rather than deep root healing. So just keeping in mind some of the things that you have gone through, maybe what you read in the last relapse was kind of the profound, like, okay, there's some roots here. And that's obviously what we need to look at. What Sathya is saying is incredibly valuable, learning to grow in awareness earlier. There was something that Jay Stringer, one of my favorite authors and guys in this industry, wrote the book Unwanted. He talks about when somebody has lingering sexual struggles, when they are in a season that you would think they'd be experiencing freedom, there's usually kind of three ties that come to fruition that need to be explored. First one is the family system and dysfunction. There's rigid and disengaged. Second one is sexual shame, or just shame in general around core belief system or your story. And then the last one, which is quite shocking to a lot of people, is sexual abuse. Sexual abuse can very, very often get covered up. And I've worked with lots of guys who have, you know, like Sathya, they're sober for 4 months or 6 months or 8 months. And there's a part of their story that they've just never actually uncovered, either out of ignorance because they don't know about it because it happened when they were very young, or out of fear that that's the, you know, what if they face that? What would happen? So not saying that's your case, but those three streams that Jay Stringer talks about are fundamental. So exploring the family system, the shame, or the potential abuse, we all fall into one, two, or three of those in our lives. We just naturally do. So might just be some deeper root that hasn't been explored, or there might be some inner child healing that you need to do to learn to reparent that inner child so that you can be equipped to live that out when those things arise. So that's what comes to my mind there, Steve.
Yeah. And the sexual abuse thing is important because sexual abuse isn't always just, it's not always being molested or that kind of stuff. There's actually very subtle forms of sexual abuse that play into our stories, they play into our sexual development, and certainly, you know, the sexual experiences we have as adults. And we did an interview with Doug Carpenter. He's phenomenal in this area. Yeah, he's a legend. So you might want to go check that out as well if that's striking a chord, because if that is at play, he'll give you some good insights into why and what you can do about it. So but hey, you're killing it, man. Like keep up the really good work. And like Sean said, you know, you're about to hit 4 years, I guess, since you started this recovery journey very seriously. after struggling for, you know, 4.5, almost 5 decades. So you're right on track. And it should just be a couple tweaks here or there. You might need to try a couple different things to see what happens and report back to us. We want to hear about your progress too once you hit that full place of freedom.
Yeah, totally.
Great. Well, hey, guys, thanks so much for listening. Again, if you like this segment, you like the format we're doing here, make sure that you share it. Make sure that you are leaving ratings and reviews. And if you got a question yourself and you want to be coached here online, like I said, as long as we get the questions coming in, we will continue to do this and we'll eventually invite you guys to join us and do some live coaching. It's going to be a blast. I hope we get to be a part of it with you guys. So make sure you submit your questions. In the meantime, God bless you guys. Have a great day.
Hey, everybody, it's Thea again. Thanks for listening to Unleash the Man Within. I wanted to take a quick moment to let you know about a free ebook that I wrote for you called The Ultimate Guide to Porn Recovery. It provides a basic framework for the recovery process and a few of my top tips completely free of charge. You can get it now at www.ultimaterecoveryguide.com. That's www.ultimaterecoveryguide.com. Now, if you've been impacted by the podcast and you want to show some support in less than 60 seconds, there are 3 ways you can do that. First, you can leave a rating or review on your podcast platform. This lets people like you know that the content here is valuable. Secondly, you can share this episode with someone in your life that might benefit from the content. If you're passionate about helping other people experience freedom and success in their lives, this is one of the easiest ways to do that. And lastly, you can subscribe. I personally only listen to the podcast that I subscribe to. If you're seeking daily encouragement, guidance, and insight in your recovery journey, I highly recommend subscribing to Unleash the Man Within. Thanks for listening. I look forward to connecting with you very, very soon.
The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast by Sathya Sam and his guests are for general information only and should not be considered medical, clinical, or any other form of professional advice. Any reliance on the information provided is done at your own risk.